I didn't want to think about it. What was it like? V pressed. A peach kiss? A plum kiss? Or maybe an alfalfa kiss? What? Was it a peck? Did mouths part? Or was there tongue? Never mind. You don't have to answer that. Patch isn't the kind of guy to deal with preliminaries. There was tongue involved. Guaranteed. I covered my face with my hands, hiding behind them. Patch probably thought I didn't have any self-control. I'd fallen apart in his arms. I'd melted like butter. Right before I told him he should go, I was pretty sure I'd made a sound that was a cross between a sigh of sheer bliss and a moan of ecstasy. That would explain his arrogant grin. "Can we talk about this later?" I asked, pinching the bridge of my nose. "No way," I sighed. "I'm dead tired. I can't believe you're thinking about keeping me in suspense." "I'm hoping you'll forget about it." "Fat chance." I tried to envision the muscles along my neck relaxing, forestalling the headache I felt creeping on. "Are we still on for shopping?" "I'll pick you up at 4. I thought we weren't meeting until 5. "Circumstances have changed. I'll be there even earlier if I can get out of family time. My mom's having a nervous breakdown. She blames my bad grades on her parenting skills. Apparently, spending time together is the solution. Wish me luck." I snapped my phone shut and slid deep into my bed. I pictured Patch's unprincipled grin and his glittering black eyes. After thrashing around in bed for several minutes, I gave up trying to get comfortable. The truth was, as long as Patch was on my mind, comfort was out of the question. When I was little, Dorothea's godson Lionel shattered one of the kitchen glasses. He swept up all the shards of glass except one, and he dared me to lick it. I imagined falling for Patch was a little like licking that shard. I knew it was stupid. I knew I'd get cut. After all these years, one thing hadn't changed. I was still lured by danger. Suddenly, I sat up straight in bed and reached for my cell. I switched on the lamp. The battery showed fully charged. My spine tingled ominously. My cell was supposed to be dead. So how had my mom and V gotten through? Rain battered the colorful awnings of the shops along the pier and spilled to the sidewalk below. The antique gas lamps that were staggered down both sides of the street glowed to life. With our umbrellas bumping together, V and I hustled down the sidewalk and under the pink and white striped awning of Victoria's Secret. We shook out our umbrellas in unison and propped them just outside the entrance. A boom of thunder sent us flying through the doors. I stamped rain from my shoes and shuddered off the cold. Several oil diffusers burned on a display at the center of the store, surrounding us with an exotic, lusty smell. A woman in black slacks and a stretchy black tee stepped forward. She had a measuring tape snaked around her neck, and she started to reach for it. "Would you girls like a free measuring?" "Put the damn measuring tape away," V ordered. "I already know my size. I don't need reminding." I gave the woman a smile that was part apology as I trailed after V, who was heading toward the clearance bins at the back. "A D cup is nothing to be ashamed of," I told V. I picked up a blue satin bra and hunted for the price tag. "Who said anything about being ashamed?" V said. "I'm not ashamed. Why would I be ashamed? The only other 16-year-olds with boobs as big as mine are suffused with silicone, and everyone knows it. Why would I have reason to be ashamed?" She rummaged through a bin. "Think they have any bras in here that can get my babies to lie flat?" "They're called sports bras, and they have a nasty side effect called the uniboob," I said, my eyes picking out a lacy black bra from the pile. I shouldn't have been looking at lingerie. It naturally made me think about sexy things. Like kissing. Like Patch. I closed my eyes and replayed our night together. The touch of Patch's hand on my thigh, his lips tasting my neck. V caught me off guard with a pair of turquoise leopard print undies slung at my chest. "These would look nice on you," she said. All you need is a booty like mine to fill them. What had I been thinking? I'd come this close to kissing Patch. The same Patch who just might be invading my mind. The same Patch who saved me from plunging to my death on the Archangel. Because that's what I was sure had happened, although I had zero logical explanations. I wondered if he had somehow suspended time and caught me during the fall. If he was capable of talking to my thoughts, maybe, just maybe, he was capable of other things. Or maybe, I thought with a chill, I could no longer trust my mind. I still had the scrap of paper Patch had tucked inside my pocket, but there was no way I was going to the party tonight. I secretly enjoyed the attraction between us, but the mystery and eeriness outweighed it. From now on, I was going to flush Patch out of my system. And this time, I meant it. It would be like a cleansing diet. The problem was, the only diet I'd ever been on backfired. Once I tried to go an entire month without chocolate. Not one bite. At the end of 2 weeks, I broke down and binged on more chocolate than I would have eaten in 3 months. I hoped my chocolate-free diet didn't foreshadow what would happen if I tried to avoid Patch. "What are you doing?" I asked, my attention drawn to V. "What does it look like I'm doing? I'm peeling the clearance price stickers off these clearance bras and sticking them on the not-on-sale bras. That way I can get sexy bras at trashy bra prices." "You can't do that. She'll scan the barcodes when you check out. She'll know what you're up to." "Barcodes? They don't scan barcodes." She didn't sound too sure. "They do, I swear. Cross my heart." I figured lying was better than watching V get hauled off to jail. "Well, it seemed like a good idea." "You have to get these," I told V, tossing a scrap of silk at her, hoping to distract her. She held up the panties, tiny red crabs embroidered on the fabric. "That is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen." "I like that black bra you're holding, on the other hand. I think you should get it. You go pay, and I'll keep looking." I paid. Then, thinking it would be easier to forget about Patch if I was looking at something more benign, I wandered over to the wall of lotions. I was sniffing a bottle of Dream Angels when I felt a familiar presence nearby. It was like someone had dropped a scoop of ice cream down the back of my shirt. It was the same shivery jolt I experienced whenever Patch approached. V and I were still the only two customers in the shop, but on the other side of the plate glass window, I saw a hooded figure step back under a shadowed awning across the street. Freshly unsettled, I stood immobile for a whole minute before I pulled myself together and went to find V. "Time to go," I told her. She was flipping through a rack of nightgowns. "Wow, look at this. Flannel pajamas, 50% off. I need a pair of flannel PJs." I kept one eye glued to the window. "I think I'm being followed." V's head jerked up. "Patch?" "No, look across the street." V squinted. "I don't see anyone." Neither did I anymore. A car had driven past, interrupting my line of vision. I think they went inside the shop. "How do you know they're following you?" A bad feeling. "Did they look like anyone we know? For example, a cross between Pippi Longstocking and the Wicked Witch of the West would obviously give us Marcy Miller." "It wasn't Marcy," I said, eyes still trained across the street. "When I left the arcade last night to buy cotton candy, I saw someone watching me. I think the same person is here now."
"Are you serious? Why are you just telling me this now? Who is it?"
I didn't know, and that scared me more than anything. I directed my voice at the sales lady. "Is there a back door to the shop?" She looked up from tidying a drawer.
"Employees only."
"Is the person male or female?" V wanted to know. "I can't tell."
"Well, why do you think they're following you? What do they want?"
"To scare me." It seemed reasonable enough.
"Why would they want to scare you?"
Again, I didn't know. "We need a diversion," I told V.
"Exactly what I was thinking," she said.
"And we know I'm really good at diversions.
Give me your jean jacket."
I stared at her. "No way. We know nothing about this person. I'm not letting you go out there dressed like me. What if they're armed?"
Sometimes your imagination scares me, V said. I had to admit, the idea that they were armed and out to kill was a little far-fetched. But with all the creepy things happening lately, I didn't blame myself for feeling on edge and assuming the worst.
I'll go out first, said V. If they follow me, you follow them. I'll head up the hill toward the cemetery, and then we'll bookend them and get some answers.
A minute later, V left the store wearing my jean jacket. She picked up my red umbrella, holding it low on her head. Other than the fact that she was a few inches too tall and a few pounds too voluptuous, she passed as me. From where I crouched behind the rack of nightgowns, I watched the hooded figure step out of the store across the street and follow after V. I crept closer to the window. Though the figure's baggy sweatshirt and jeans were meant to look androgynous, the walk was feminine. Definitely feminine. V and the girl turned the corner and disappeared, and I jogged to the door. Outside, the rain had turned into a downpour. Grabbing V's umbrella, I picked up my pace, keeping under the awnings, steering clear of the pelting rain. I could feel the bottoms of my jeans dampening. I wished I'd worn boots. Behind me, the pier extended out to the cement gray ocean. In front of me, the strip of shops ended at the base of a steep, grassy hill. At the top of the hill, I could just make out the high cast iron fence of the local cemetery. I unlocked the neon, cranked the defroster to high, and set the windshield wipers to full power. I drove out of the lot and turned left, accelerating up the winding hill. The trees of the cemetery loomed ahead, their branches deceptively coming to life through the mad chop of the wipers. The white marble headstones seemed to stab up from the darkness. The gray headstones dissolved into the atmosphere. Out of nowhere, a red object hurtled into the windshield. It smacked the glass directly in my line of vision, then flew up and over the car. I stomped on the brakes, and the neon skidded to a stop on the shoulder of the road. I opened the door and got out. I jogged to the back of the car, searching for what had hit me. There was a moment of confusion as my mind processed what I was seeing. My red umbrella was tangled in the weeds. It was broken. One side was collapsed in the exact way I might expect if it had been hurled with force against another, harder object. Through the onslaught of rain, I heard a choked sob. V? I said. I jogged across the road, shielding my eyes from the rain as I swept my gaze over the landscape. A body lay crumpled just ahead. I started running. V! I dropped to my knees beside her. She was on her side, her legs drawn up to her chest. She groaned. What happened? Are you okay? Can you move? I threw my head back, blinking rain. Think, I told myself. My cell phone. Back in the car, I had to call 911. I'm going to get help, I told V. She moaned and clutched my hand. I lowered myself down on her, holding her tightly. Tears burned behind my eyes. What happened? Was it the person who followed you? Did they do this to you? What did they do? V murmured something unintelligible that might have been handbag. Sure enough, her handbag was missing. You're going to be all right. I worked to hold my voice steady. I had a dark feeling stirring inside me, and I was trying to keep it at bay. I was certain the same person who'd watched me at Delphic and followed me shopping today was responsible. But I blamed myself for putting V in harm's way. I ran back to the neon and punched 911 into my cell. Trying to keep the hysteria out of my voice, I said, I need an ambulance. My friend was attacked and robbed. Chapter 11. Monday passed in a daze. I went from class to class, waiting for the final bell of the day. I'd called the hospital before school and was told that V was heading into the OR. Her left arm had been broken during the attack, and since the bone wasn't aligned, she needed surgery. I wanted to see her, but couldn't until later in the afternoon, when the anesthesia wore off and hospital staff moved her to her own room. It was especially important that I hear her version of the attack before she either forgot the details or embellished them. Anything she remembered might fill a hole in the picture and help me figure out who had done this. As the hours stretched toward afternoon, my focus shifted from V to the girl outside Victoria's Secret. Who was she? What did she want? Maybe it was a disturbing coincidence that V had been attacked minutes after I'd watched the girl follow after her, but my instincts disagreed. I wished I had a better picture of what she looked like.
The bulky hoodie and jeans, compounded with the rain, had done a good job of disguising her. For all I knew, it could have been Marcy Miller. But deep inside, it didn't feel like the right match. I swung by my locker to pick up my biology textbook, then headed to my last class. I walked in to find Patch's chair empty. Typically, he arrived at the last possible moment, tying with the tardy bell. But the bell rang, and Coach took his place at the chalkboard and started lecturing on equilibrium. I pondered Patch's empty chair. A tiny voice at the back of my head speculated that his absence might be connected to V's attack. It was a little strange that he was missing on the morning after. And I couldn't forget the icy chill I'd felt moments before looking outside Victoria's Secret and realizing I was being watched. Every other time I'd felt that way, it was because Patch was near. The voice of reason quickly extinguished Patch's involvement. He could have caught a cold, or he could have run out of gas on the drive to school and was stranded miles away. Or maybe there was a high-bets pool game going on at Beau's Arcade, and he figured it was more profitable than an afternoon spent learning the intricacies of the human body. At the end of class, Coach stopped me on my way out the door. "Hang on a minute, Nora." I turned back and hiked my backpack up my shoulder. "Yes?" He extended a folded piece of paper.
"Miss Green stopped by before class and asked me to give this to you," he said.
I accepted the note. "Miss Green?" I didn't have any teachers by that name.
"The new school psychologist. She just replaced Dr. Hendrickson."
I unfolded the note and read the message scrawled inside. "Dear Nora, I'll be taking over Dr. Hendrickson's role as your school psychologist. I noticed you missed your last two appointments with Dr. H. Please come in right away so we can get acquainted. I've mailed a letter to your mother to make her aware of the change. All best, Miss Green." "Thanks," I told Coach, folding the note until it was small enough to tuck inside my pocket. Out in the hall, I merged with the flow of the crowd. No avoiding it now, I had to go. I steered my way through the halls until I could see the closed door to Dr. Hendrickson's office. Sure enough, there was a new name plaque on the door. The polished brass gleamed against the drab oak door. "Miss D. Green, school psychologist." I knocked on the door, and a moment later it opened from within. Miss Green had flawless pale skin, sea-blue eyes, a lush mouth, and fine, straight blonde hair that tumbled past her elbows. It was parted at the crown of her oval-shaped face. A pair of turquoise cat's eye glasses sat at the tip of her nose, and she was dressed formally in a gray herringbone pencil skirt and a pink silk blouse. Her figure was willowy but feminine. She couldn't have been more than 5 years older than me.
"You must be Nora Gray. You look just like the picture in your file," she said, giving my hand a firm pump. Her voice was abrupt, but not rude. Businesslike.
Stepping back, she signaled me to enter the office.
"Can I get you juice? Water?" she asked.
"What happened to Dr. Hendrickson?"
"He took early retirement. I've had my eye on this job for a while, so I jumped on the opening. I went to Florida State, but I grew up in Portland, and my parents still live there. It's nice to be close to family again."
I surveyed the small office. It had changed drastically since I'd last been in a few weeks ago. The wall-to-wall bookshelves were now filled with academic but generic-looking hardcovers, all bound in neutral colors with gold lettering. Dr. Hendrickson had used the shelves to display family pictures, but there were no snapshots of Miss Green's private life. The same fern hung by the window, but under Dr. Hendrickson's care, it had been far more brown than green. A few days with Miss Green, and already it looked pert and alive. There was a pink paisley chair opposite the desk, and several moving boxes stacked in the far corner.
"Friday was my first day," she explained, seeing my eyes fall on the moving boxes. "I'm still unpacking. Have a seat."
I lowered my backpack down my arm and sat on the paisley chair. Nothing in the small room gave me any clues as to Miss Green's personality. She had a stack of file folders on her desk. Not neat, but not messy either. And a white mug of what looked like tea. There wasn't a trace of perfume or air freshener. Her computer monitor was black. Miss Green crouched in front of a file cabinet behind her desk, tugged out a clean manila folder, and printed my name on the tab in black magic marker. She placed it on her desk next to my old file,
which bore a few of Dr. Hendrickson's coffee mug stains.
"I spent the whole weekend going through Dr. Hendrickson's files," she said. "Just between the two of us, his handwriting gives me a migraine, so I'm copying over all the files. I was amazed to find he didn't use a computer to type his notes. Who still uses longhand in this day and age?"
She settled back into her swivel chair, crossed her legs, and smiled politely at me.
"Well, why don't you tell me a little bit about the history of your meetings with Dr. Hendrickson?"
I could barely decipher his notes. "It appeared the two of you were discussing how you feel about your mom's new job." "It's not all that new. She's been working for a year."
"She used to be a stay-at-home mom, correct? And after your dad's passing, she took on a full-time job."
She squinted at the sheet of paper in my file.
"She works for an auction company, correct? It looks like she coordinates estate auctions all down the coast."
She peeked at me over her glasses.
"That must require a lot of time away from home."
"We wanted to stay in our farmhouse," I said, my tone touching on the defensive. "We couldn't afford the mortgage if she took a local job." I hadn't exactly loved my sessions with Dr. Hendrickson, but I found myself resenting him for retiring and abandoning me to Miss Green. I was starting to get a feel for her, and she seemed attentive to detail. I sensed her itching to dig into every dark corner of my life.
"Yes, but you must be very lonely all by yourself at the farmhouse."
"We have a housekeeper who stays with me every afternoon until 9 or 10 at night."
"But a housekeeper isn't the same thing as a mother."
I eyed the door. I didn't even try to be discreet.
"Do you have a best friend? A boyfriend? Someone you can talk to when your housekeeper doesn't quite fit the bill?"
She dunked a teabag in the mug, then raised it for a sip. "I have a best friend." I'd made up my mind to say as little as possible. The less I said, the shorter the appointment. The shorter the appointment, the sooner I could visit V. Her eyebrows peaked.
"Boyfriend?"
"No."
"You're an attractive girl. I imagine there must be some interest from the opposite sex."
"Here's the thing," I said as patiently as possible. "I really appreciate that you're trying to help me, but I had this exact conversation with Dr. Hendrickson a year ago when my dad died. Rehashing it with you isn't helping. It's like going back in time and reliving it all over again. Yes, it was tragic and horrible, and I'm still dealing with it every day. But what I really need is to move on." The clock on the wall ticked between us.
"Well," Miss Green said at last, plastering on a smile, "it's very helpful to know your viewpoint, Nora, which is what I was trying to understand all along. I'll make a note of your feelings in your file. Anything else you want to talk about?"
"Nope." I smiled to confirm that really, I was doing fine. She leafed through a few more pages of my file. I had no idea what observations Dr. Hendrickson had immortalized there, and I didn't want to wait around long enough to find out. I lifted my backpack off the floor and scooted to the edge of the chair. "I don't mean to cut things short, but I need to be somewhere at 4.
"Oh?"
I had no desire to go into V's attack with Miss Green. "Library research," I lied.
"For which class?"
I said the first answer that popped to mind.
"Biology." "Speaking of classes, how are yours going? Any concerns in that department?"
"No." She flipped a few more pages in my file.
"Excellent grades," she observed. "It says here you're tutoring your biology partner, Patch Cipriano."
She looked up, apparently wanting my confirmation. I was surprised my tutoring assignment was important enough to make it into the school psychologist's file. "So far we haven't been able to meet. Conflicting schedules." I gave a what-can-you-do shrug. She tapped my file on her desk, tidying all the loose sheets of paper into one clean stack, then inserted it into the new file she'd hand-labeled.
"To give you fair warning, I'm going to talk with Mr. McConaughey and see about setting some parameters for your tutoring sessions. I'd like all meetings to be held here at school, under the direct supervision of a teacher or other faculty member. I don't want you tutoring Patch off school property. I especially don't want the two of you meeting alone."
A chill tiptoed along my skin.
"Why?
What's going on?"
"I can't discuss it."
The only reason I could think why she didn't want me alone with Patch was that he was dangerous. "My past might frighten you," he'd said on the loading platform of the Archangel.
"Thanks for your time. I won't keep you any longer.
Miss Green said. She strode to the door, propping it open with her slender hip. She gave a parting smile, but it looked perfunctory. After leaving Miss Green's office, I called the hospital. V's surgery was over, but she was still in the recovery room and couldn't have visitors until 7 p.m. I consulted the clock on my phone. 3 hours. I found the Fiat in the student parking lot and dropped inside, hoping an afternoon spent doing homework at the library would keep my mind off the long wait. I stayed at the library through the afternoon, and before I realized it, the clock on the wall had passed quietly into evening. My stomach rumbled against the quiet of the library, and my thoughts went to the vending machine just inside the entrance. The last of my homework could wait until later, but there was still one project that required the help of library resources. I had a vintage IBM computer at home with dial-up internet service, and I typically tried to save myself a lot of unnecessary shouting and hair-pulling by using the library's computer lab. I had a theater review of Othello due on the e-zine editor's desk by 9 p.m., and I made a deal with myself, promising I'd go hunt down food as soon as I finished it. Packing up my belongings, I walked to the elevators. Inside the cage, I pushed the button to close the doors, but didn't immediately request a floor. I pulled out my cell and called the hospital again. "Hi," I told the answering nurse. "My friend is recovering from surgery, and when I checked in earlier this afternoon, I was told she'd be out tonight. Her name is V. Sky." There was a pause and the clicking of computer keys. "Looks like they'll be bringing her to a private room within the hour." "What time do visiting hours end?"
8.
"Thank you." I disconnected and pressed the third floor button, sending me up. On the third floor, I followed signs to collections, hoping that if I read several theater reviews in the local newspaper, it would spark my muse. "Excuse me," I said to the librarian behind the collections desk. "I'm trying to find copies of the Portland Press Herald from the past year, particularly the theater guide." "We don't keep anything that current in collections," she said. "But if you look online, I believe the Portland Press Herald keeps archives on their website. Head straight down the hallway behind you and you'll see the media lab on your left." Inside the lab, I signed onto a computer. I was about to dive into my assignment when an idea struck me. I couldn't believe I hadn't thought of it earlier. After confirming no one was watching over my shoulder, I Googled Patch Cipriano. Maybe I'd find an article that would shed light on his past. Or maybe he kept a blog. I frowned at the search results. Nothing. No Facebook, no MySpace, no blog. It was like he didn't exist. "What's your story, Patch?" I murmured. "Who are you, really?" Half an hour later, I'd read several reviews and my eyes were glazing over. I spread my online search to all newspapers in Maine. A link to Kinghorn Prep's school paper popped up. A few seconds passed before I placed the familiar name. Elliot had transferred from Kinghorn Prep. On a whim, I decided to check it out. If the school was as elite as Elliot claimed, it probably had a respectable paper. I clicked on the link, scrolled over the archives page, and randomly chose March 21st of earlier this year. A moment later, I had a headline. Student questioned in Kinghorn Prep murder. I scooted my chair closer, lured by the idea of reading something more exciting than theater reviews. A 16-year-old Kinghorn Preparatory student who police were questioning in what has been dubbed the Kinghorn Hanging has been released without charge, after 18-year-old Kirsten Halverson's body was found hanging from a tree on the wooded campus of Kinghorn Prep. Police questioned sophomore Elliot Saunders, who was seen with the victim on the night of her death. My mind was slow to process the information. Elliot was questioned as part of a murder investigation? Halverson worked as a waitress at Blind Joe's. Police confirmed that Halverson and Saunders were seen walking the campus together late Saturday night. Halverson's body was discovered Sunday morning, and Saunders was released Monday afternoon after a suicide note was discovered in Halverson's apartment. "Find anything interesting?" I jumped at the sound of Elliot's voice behind me. I whirled around to find him leaning against the door jamb. His eyes were narrowed ever so slightly, his mouth set in a line. Something cold flushed through me, like a blush, only opposite. I wheeled my chair slightly to the right, trying to position myself in front of the computer's monitor.
I'm just finishing up homework. How about you? What are you doing? I didn't hear you come in. How long have you been standing there?"
My pitch was all over the place. Elliot pushed away from the door jamb and walked inside the lab. I groped blindly behind me for the monitor's on-off button. I said, "I'm attempting to jumpstart my inspiration on a theater review I'm supposed to have to my editor by later tonight." I was still speaking much too fast. Where was the button? Elliot peered around me.
"Theater reviews?"
My fingers brushed a button, and I heard the monitor drain to black. "I'm sorry, what did you say you're doing here?"
"I was just walking by when I saw you. Something wrong? You seem jumpy."
Low blood sugar." I swept my papers and books into a pile and shoehorned them inside my backpack. "I haven't eaten since lunch." Elliot hooked a nearby chair and wheeled it next to mine. He sat backward on it and leaned close, invading my personal space.
"Maybe I can help with the review."
I leaned away. "Wow, that's really nice of you, but I'm going to call it quits for now. I need to grab something to eat. It's a good time to break."
"Let me buy you dinner," he said. "Isn't there a diner just around the corner?"
"Thanks, but my mom will be expecting me. She's been out of town all week and gets back tonight." I stood and tried to step around him. He held his cell phone out, and it caught me in the navel.
"Call her."
I lowered my gaze to the phone and scrambled for an excuse. "I'm not allowed to go out on school nights."
"It's called lying, Nora. Tell her homework is taking longer than you expected. Tell her you need another hour at the library. She's not going to know the difference."
Elliot's voice had taken on an edge I'd never heard before. His blue eyes snapped with a newfound coldness. His mouth looked thinner. "My mom doesn't like me going out with guys she hasn't met," I said. Elliot smiled, but there was no warmth.
"We both know you're not too concerned with your mom's rules. Since Saturday night, you were with me at Delphic."
I had my backpack slung over one shoulder, and I was clutching the strap. I didn't say anything. I brushed past Elliot and walked out of the lab in a hurry, realizing that if he turned the monitor on, he'd see the article. But there wasn't anything I could do now. Halfway to the collections desk, I dared a glance over my shoulder. The plate glass walls showed that the lab was empty. Elliot was nowhere to be seen. I retraced my steps to the computer, keeping my eyes on guard in case he reappeared. I turned on the monitor. The murder investigation article was still up. Sending a copy to the nearest printer, I tucked it inside my binder, logged off, and hurried out. Chapter 12. My cell phone buzzed in my pocket, and after confirming I wasn't being evil-eyed by a librarian, I answered.
"Mom? Good news," she said. "The auction wrapped up early. I got on the road an hour ahead of schedule and should be home soon. Where are you?"
"Hi. I wasn't expecting you until later. I'm just leaving the library. How was upstate New York?"
"Upstate New York was long," she laughed, but she sounded drained.
"I can't wait to see you." I looked around for a clock. I wanted to stop by the hospital and see V before heading home.
"Here's the deal," I told my mom. "I need to visit V. I might be a few minutes late. I'll hurry, I promise."
"Of course." I detected the tiniest disappointment. "Any updates? I got your message this morning about her surgery."
"Surgery is over. They're taking her to a private room any minute now."
"Nora,"
I heard the swell of emotion in her voice.
"I'm so glad it wasn't you. I couldn't live with myself if anything happened to you. Especially since your dad..."
She broke off.
"I'm just glad we're both safe. Say hi to V for me. See you soon. Hugs and kisses. Love you, Mom."
Coldwater's Regional Medical Center is a 3-story red brick structure with a covered walkway leading up to the main entrance. I passed through the revolving glass doors and stopped at the main desk to inquire about V. I was told she'd been moved to a room half an hour ago, and that visiting hours ended in 15 minutes. I located the elevators and punched the button to send me up a floor. At room 207, I pushed on the door.
"V?"
I coaxed a bouquet of balloons inside behind me, crossing the small foyer, and found V reclining in bed, her left arm in a cast and slung across her body.
"Hi," I said when I saw she was awake.
V expelled a luxurious sigh.
"I love drugs. Really, they're amazing. Even better than an Enzo cappuccino. Hey, that rhymed.
Enzo Cappuccino. It's a sign. I'm destined to be a poet. Want to hear another poem? I'm good at impromptu. A nurse swished in and tinkered around with V's IV. Feeling okay? She asked V. Forget being a poet, V said. I'm destined for stand-up comedy. Knock, knock. What? I said. The nurse rolled her eyes. Who's there? Crab, said V. Crab who? Crab your towel, we are going to the beach. Maybe a little less painkillers, I told the nurse. Too late, I just gave her another dose. Wait until you see her in 10 minutes. She swished back out the door. So, I asked V, what's the verdict? The verdict? My doctor is a lard arse. Closely resembles an Oompa Loompa. Don't give me your severe look. Last time he came in, he broke into the funky chicken. And he's forever eating chocolate. Mostly chocolate animals. You know the solid chocolate bunnies they're selling for Easter? That's what the Oompa Loompa ate for dinner. He had a chocolate duck at lunch with the side of yellow peeps. I meant the verdict. I pointed at the medical paraphernalia adorning her. Oh, one busted arm, a concussion, and assorted cuts, scrapes, and bruises. Fortunately for my quick reflexes, I jumped out of the way before any major damage was done. When it comes to reflexes, I'm like a cat. I'm Catwoman. I'm invulnerable. The only reason he got a piece of me is because of the rain. Cats don't like water. It impairs us. It's our kryptonite. I am so sorry, I told V sincerely. I should be the one in the hospital bed. And get all the drugs? No way. Have the police found any leads? I asked. Nada, zilch, zero. No eyewitnesses? We were at a cemetery in the middle of a rainstorm, V pointed out. Most normal people were indoors. She was right. Most normal people had been indoors. Of course, V and I had been out, along with the mysterious girl who followed V out of Victoria's Secret. How did it happen? I asked. I was walking to the cemetery like we planned, when all of a sudden I heard footsteps closing in behind me, V explained. That's when I looked back, and everything came together really fast. There was the flash of a gun and him lunging for me. Like I told the cops, my brain wasn't exactly transmitting get a visual ID. It was more like, holy freak show, I'm about to go splat. He growled, whacked me 3 or 4 times with the gun, grabbed my handbag, and ran. I was more confused than ever. Wait, it was a guy? You saw his face? Of course it was a guy. He had dark eyes, charcoal eyes. But that's all I saw. He was wearing a ski mask. At the mention of the ski mask, my heart skittered through several beats. It was the same guy who'd jumped in front of the neon. I was sure of it. I hadn't imagined him. V was proof. I remembered the way all evidence of the crash had disappeared. Maybe I hadn't imagined that part either. This guy, whoever he was real. And he was out there. But if I hadn't imagined the damage to the neon, what really happened that night? Was my vision or my memory somehow being altered? After a moment, a slew of secondary questions raced to mind. What did he want this time? Was he connected to the girl outside Victoria's Secret? Had he known I'd be shopping at the pier? Wearing a ski mask constituted advance planning, so he must have known beforehand where I'd be. And he didn't want me to recognize his face. Who did you tell we were going shopping? I asked V suddenly. She rammed a pillow behind her neck, trying to get comfortable. My mom. That's it? Nobody else? I might have brought it up to Elliot. My blood seemed to suddenly stop flowing. You told Elliot? What's the big deal?
There's something I need to tell you, I said soberly. Remember the night I drove the Neon home and hit a deer?
Yeah,
she said, frowning. It wasn't a deer. It was a guy. A guy in a ski mask.
Shut up, she whispered. You're telling me my attack wasn't random? You're telling me this guy wants something from me? No, wait. He wants something from you. I was wearing your jacket. He thought I was you.
My whole body felt leaden. After a count of silence, she said,
Are you sure you didn't tell Patch about shopping? Because on further reflection, I'm thinking the guy had Patch's build. Tallish, leanish, strongish, sexyish, aside from the attacking part.
Patch's eyes aren't charcoal, they're black, I pointed out. But I was uncomfortably aware that I had told Patch we were going shopping at the pier. V raised an indecisive shoulder.
Maybe his eyes were black. I can't remember. It happened really fast. I can be specific about the gun, she said helpfully. It was aimed at me, like right at me.
I pushed a few puzzle pieces around my mind. If Patch had attacked V, he must have seen her leave the store wearing my jacket and thought it was me. When he figured out he was following the wrong girl, he hit V with the gun out of anger and vanished. The only problem was, I couldn't imagine Patch brutalizing V. It felt off. Besides, he was supposedly at a party on the coast all night. Did your attacker look at all like Elliot? I asked. I watched V absorb the question. Whatever drug she'd been given, it seemed to slow her thought process, and I could practically hear each gear in her brain grind into action.
He was about 20 pounds too light and 4 inches too tall to be Elliot.
This is all my fault, I said. I never should have let you leave the store wearing my jacket.
I know you don't want to hear this, said V, looking like she was fighting a drug-induced yawn. But the more I think on it, the more similarities I see between Patch and my attacker. Same build, same long-legged stride. Too bad his school file was empty. We need an address. We need to canvass his neighborhood. We need to find a gullible little granny neighbor who could be coaxed into mounting a webcam in her window and aiming it at his house. Because something about Patch just isn't right.
You honestly think Patch could have done this to you? I asked, still unconvinced. V chewed at her lip.
I think he's hiding something. Something big.
I wasn't going to argue that. V sank deeper in her bed.
My body's tingling. I feel good all over.
We don't have an address, I said, but we do know where he works.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking? V asked, eyes brightening briefly through the haze of chemical sedation.
Based on past experience? I hope not.
The truth is, we need to brush up on our sleuthing skills, said V. Use them or lose them. That's what Coach said. We need to find out more about Patch's past. Hey, I bet if we document, Coach will even give us extra credit.
Highly doubtful, given that if V was involved, the sleuthing would likely take an illegal turn. Not to mention this particular sleuthing job had nothing to do with biology, even remotely. The slight smile V had dragged out of me faded. Fun as it was to be lighthearted about the situation, I was frightened. The guy in the ski mask was out there, planning his next attack. It kind of made sense that Patch might know what was going on. The guy in the ski mask jumped in front of the Neon the day after Patch became my biology partner. Maybe it wasn't a coincidence. Just then the nurse popped her head inside the door. It's 8 o'clock, she told me, tapping her watch. Visiting hours are over. I'll be right out, I said. As soon as her footsteps faded down the hall, I shut the door to V's room. I wanted privacy before I told her about the murder investigation surrounding Elliot. However, when I got back to V's bed, it was apparent that her medication had kicked in.
Here it comes,
she said with an expression of pure bliss.
Drug rush any moment now. The surge of warmth. Bye-bye, Mr. Payne. V, knock, knock.
This is really important.
Knock, knock.
It's about Elliot.
Knock, knock,
she said in a sing-song voice. I sighed. Who's there?
Boo.
Boo-hoo.
Boo-hoo, somebody's crying, and it's not me.
She broke into hysterical laughter. Realizing it was pointless to push the issue, I said, call me tomorrow after you're discharged. I unzipped my backpack. Before I forget, I brought your homework. Where do you want me to put it? She pointed at the trash can.
Right there will be fine.
I pulled the Fiat into the garage and pocketed the keys. The sky lacked stars on the drive home, and sure enough, a light rain started to fall. I tugged on the garage door, lowering it to the ground and locking it. I let myself into the kitchen. A light was on somewhere upstairs, and a moment later my mom came running down the stairs and threw her arms around me. My mom has dark, wavy hair and green eyes. She's an inch shorter than I am, but we share the same bone structure. She always smells like love by Ralph Lauren.
I'm so glad you're safe, she said, squeezing me tight.
Safe-ish, I thought. Chapter 13. The following night at 7, the Borderline's parking lot was packed. After nearly an hour of begging, V and I had convinced her parents that we needed to celebrate her first night out of the hospital over chiles rellenos and virgin strawberry daiquiris. At least, that's what we were claiming, but we had an ulterior motive. I tucked the neon into a tight parking space and turned off the engine.
Ew,
said V when I passed the keys back and my fingers brushed hers.
Think you could sweat a little more?
I'm nervous.
Gee, I had no clue.
I inadvertently looked at the door.
I know what you're thinking,
V said, tightening her lips.
And the answer is no. No as in no way.
You don't know what I'm thinking, I said. V viced my arm.
The heck I don't.
I wasn't going to run, I said. Not me.
Liar.
Tuesday was Patch's night off, and V had put it into my head that it would be the perfect time to interrogate his coworkers. I envisioned myself sashaying up to the bar, giving the bartender a coy Marcy Miller look, then segueing to the topic of Patch. I needed his home address. I needed any prior arrests. I needed to know if he had a connection to the guy in the ski mask, no matter how tenuous. And I needed to figure out why the guy in the ski mask and the mysterious girl were in my life. I peeked inside my handbag, double-checking to make sure the list of interrogation questions I'd prepared were still with me. One side of the list dealt with questions about Patch's personal life. The flip side had flirting prompts, just in case.
Whoa, 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 V said. What is that?
Nothing, I said, folding the list. V tried to grab the list, but I was faster and had it crammed deep in my handbag before she could get to it.
Rule number one, V said. There is no such thing as notes in flirting.
There's an exception to every rule.
And you're not it.
She grabbed two plastic 7-Eleven sacks from the back seat and swiveled out of the car. As soon as I stepped out, she used her good arm to hurl the sacks over the top of the neon at me.
What's this?
I asked, catching the sacks. The handles were tied and I couldn't see inside, but the unmistakable shaft of a stiletto heel threatened to poke through the plastic.
Size 8.5, V said. Shark skin. It's easier to play the part when you look the part.
I can't walk in high heels.
Good thing they're not high, then.
They look high, I said, eyeing the protruding stiletto.
Almost 5 inches. They left high behind at 4.
Lovely. If I didn't break my neck, I just might get to humiliate myself while seducing secrets out of Patch's co-workers.
Here's the deal, said V as we strode down the sidewalk to the front doors. I sort of invited a couple of people. The more the merrier, right?
Who? I asked, feeling the dark stirrings of foreboding in the pit of my stomach.
Jules and Elliot.
Before I had time to tell V exactly how bad I thought this idea was, she said,
Moment of truth. I've sort of been seeing Jules. On the sly.
What?
You should see his house. Bruce Wayne can't compete. His parents are either South American drug lords or come from serious old money. Since I haven't met them yet, I can't say which.
I was at a loss for words. My mouth opened and shut, but nothing came out.
When did this happen?
I finally managed to ask.
Pretty much right after that fateful morning at Enzo's.
Fateful? V, you have no idea.
I hope they got here first and reserved a table,
V said, stretching her neck while eyeing the crowd accumulating around the doors.
I don't want to wait. I am seriously 2 thin minutes away from death by starvation.
I grabbed V by her good elbow, pulling her aside. There's something I need to tell you.
I know, she said. You think there's a slim chance Elliot attacked me on Sunday night. Well, I think you've got Elliot confused with Patch. And after you do some sleuthing tonight, the facts will back me up. Believe me, I want to know who attacked me just as much as you. Probably even more. It's personal now. And while we're handing each other advice, here's mine. Stay away from Patch, just to be safe.
I'm glad you've thought this through, I said tersely. But here's the thing. I found an article. The doors to the borderline opened. A fresh wave of heat carrying the smell of limes and cilantro swirled out at us, along with the sound of a mariachi band playing through the speakers.
Welcome to the borderline, a hostess greeted us. Just the two of you tonight.
Elliot was standing behind her inside the dimmed foyer. We saw each other at the same moment. His mouth smiled, but his eyes did not.
Ladies,
he said, sanding his hands together as he walked over.
Looking magnificent, as always.
My skin prickled.
Where's your partner in crime? V asked, glancing around the foyer.
Paper lanterns hung from the ceiling, and a mural of a Mexican pueblo spanned two walls. The waiting benches were filled to capacity. There was no sign of Jules.
Bad news, said Elliot. The man is sick. You're going to have to settle for me.
Sick? V demanded. How sick? What kind of excuse is sick?
Sick as in it's coming out both ends?
V scrunched her nose.
Too much information.
I was still having a difficult time grasping the idea that something was going on between V and Jules. Jules came across sullen, brooding, and completely disinterested in V's company or anyone else's. Not one part of me felt comfortable with the idea of V spending time alone with Jules. Not necessarily because of how unpleasant he was or how little I knew about him, but because of the one thing I did know. He was close friends with Elliot. The hostess plucked 3 menus out of a slotted cubbyhole and led us to a booth so close to the kitchen I could feel the fire of the ovens coming through the walls. To our left was the salsa bar. To our right, glass doors moist with condensation led out to a patio. My poplin blouse was already clinging to my back. My sweat might have had more to do with the news about V and Jules than with the heat, however.
Is this good?
The waitress asked, gesturing at the booth.
It's great,
Elliot said, shrugging out of his bomber jacket.
I love this place. If the room doesn't make you sweat, the food will.
The hostess's smile lit up.
You've been here before. Can I start you with chips and our newest jalapeno salsa? It's our hottest yet.
I like things hot, said Elliot.
I was pretty sure he was being slimy. I'd been way too generous in thinking he wasn't as low as Marcy. I'd been way too generous about his character, period. Especially now that I knew he had a murder investigation hiding along with who knew how many other skeletons in his closet. The hostess swept him an appraising once over.
I'll be right back with chips and salsa. Your waitress will be here shortly to take your orders.
V plopped into the booth first. I slid in beside her, and Elliot took the seat across from me. Our eyes connected, and there was a fleck of something dark in his. Very likely, resentment. Maybe even hostility. I wondered if he knew I'd seen the article.
"Purple is your color, Nora," he said,
nodding at my scarf as I loosened it from my neck and tied it around the handle of my handbag.
"Brightens your eyes."
V nudged my foot. She actually thought he meant it as a compliment. "So," I said to Elliot with an artificial smile, "why don't you tell us about Kinghorn Prep?"
"Yeah,"
V chimed in. "Are there secret societies there? Like in the movies?"
"What's to tell?" Elliot said. "Great school. End of story."
He picked up his menu and scanned it.
"Anyone interested in an appetizer? My treat."
"If it's so great, why did you transfer?"
I met his eyes and held them. Ever so slightly, I arched my eyebrows. Challenging. A muscle in Elliot's jaw jumped just before he cracked a smile.
"The girls. I heard they were a lot finer around these parts. The rumor proved true."
He winked at me, and an ice-cold feeling shot from my head to my toes.
"Why didn't Jules transfer, too?" asked V. "We could have been the Fabulous Four, only with a lot more punch.
The Phenomenal Four." "Jules's parents are obsessed with his education. Intense doesn't begin to cover it. I swear on my life, he's going all the way to the top. The guy can't be stopped. I mean, I confess, I do okay in school, better than most. But nobody tops Jules. He's an academic god."
The dreamy look returned to V's eyes.
"I've never met his parents," she said. "Both times I've gone over, they're either out of town or working."
"They work a lot," Elliot agreed,
returning his eyes to the menu, making it hard for me to read anything in them.
"Where do they work?"
I asked. Elliot took a long drink of his water. It seemed to me like he was buying time while he devised an answer.
"Diamonds. They spend a lot of time in Africa and Australia."
"I didn't know Australia was big in the diamond business," I said.
"Yeah, neither did I," said V.
In fact, I was pretty sure Australia had no diamonds. Period.
"Why are they living in Maine?" I asked. "Why not Africa?"
Elliot studied his menu more intensely.
"What are you both having? I'm thinking the steak fajitas look good."
"If Jules's parents are in the diamond business, I bet they know a lot about choosing the perfect engagement ring," V said. "I've always wanted an emerald-cut solitaire."
I kicked V under the table. She jabbed me with her fork.
"Ow!"
I said. Our waitress paused at the end of the table long enough to ask, "Anything to drink?" Elliot looked over the top of his menu, first at me, then at V.
"Diet Coke," V said.
"Water with lime wedges, please," I said. The waitress returned amazingly quickly with our drinks. Her return was my cue to leave the table and initiate step one of the plan, and V reminded me with a second under-the-table prod from her fork.
"V," I said through my teeth, "would you like to accompany me to the ladies' room?"
I suddenly didn't want to go through with the plan. I didn't want to leave V alone with Elliot. What I did want was to drag her out, tell her about the murder investigation, then find some way to make both Elliot and Jules disappear from our lives.
"Why don't you go alone?" said V. "I think that would be a better plan."
She jerked her head at the bar and mouthed go, while making discreet shooing motions below the table.
"I was planning on going alone, but I'd really like you to join me."
"What is it with girls?" Elliot said, splitting a smile between us. "I swear, I've never known a girl who could go to the bathroom alone."
He leaned forward and grinned conspiratorially.
"Let me in on the secret. Seriously, I'll pay you $5 each."
He reached for his back pocket.
10 if I can come along and see what the big deal is."
V flashed a grin.
"Pervert, don't forget these," she told me,
stuffing the 7-Eleven sacks into my arms. Elliot's eyebrows lifted.
"Trash,"
V explained to him with a touch of snark.
"Our garbage can is full. My mom asked if I could throw these away since I was going out."
Elliot didn't look like he believed her, and V didn't look like she cared. I got up, my arms loaded with costume gear, and swallowed my burning frustration. Weaving through the tables, I took the hall leading back to the